Mahabharata, Chapter 36. Draupadi Again Insulted. After 12 long years in the forest, waiting for the day they could reclaim their kingdom, the final year of busy city life passed quickly for the Pandavas. Yudhisthira dice with Dhritarashtra, and thanks to the skills he had acquired from Vishvaparva, won much wealth from the king. He secretly distributed his winnings to his brothers. Bhima ensured that his brothers had the best of food and drink. From the ladies in the palace, Arjuna obtained many items of clothing, which he gave to his brothers, and the twins also shared with the brothers their wealth they earned from the king. It seemed to the Pandavas that they were back in their mother's house they lived so happily. They also kept vigilant eyes on Draupadi and were always alert to danger from Duryodhan's men. In the fourth month of their stay in Varata, there was a festival held in honor of Lord Shiva. Among the festivities was a wrestling contest. Many powerful fighters from all over Bharata assembled in the city, roaring like lions. These colossal-bodied men were maddened with power and strength. They strode about the wrestling arena, slapping their arms and chests. Varata honored them and organized a tournament between them. One wrestler, Jamuta, was the most powerful, and he emerged victorious from the contest. As he stood shouting out a furious challenge, no one dared come forward to fight with him. Varata then summoned his cook, Vallabha, and ordered him to fight. Bhima could not defy the king's order. Reluctantly, he prepared for the match. Although he enjoyed fighting, he was afraid someone would recognize him if he displayed too much power. Praying to Krishna that he not be recognized, he went before the roaring Jamuta. The two wrestlers appeared like infuriated elephants about to fight for leadership of the herd. A fierce fight ensued, with the combatants locked together, each looking for the other's weak points. Their blows sounded like thunderbolts striking mountains. The crowds gasped and cheered in turn. Each fighter dashed the other to the ground, threw him, pressed him down by force, and whirled the other around. They slapped and kicked one another with tremendous power. Knees struck against knees and heads against heads, sounding like two stones crashing together. As they fought, they shouted insults at each other. The crowd was delighted, some supporting Bhima and others Jamuta. Finally, Bhima decided to end the bout. He suddenly lifted his rival over his head and whirled him about. He spun him 100 times with such force that he fell unconscious. Bhima then dashed him to the ground. Seeing the senseless Jamuta lying on the ground, Virata was overjoyed. He immediately gave Bhima valuable gifts and asked if there were any others who dared challenge him. When no one came forward, Virata ordered that he fight with lions, tigers, and elephants. Bhima overpowered many animals in the midst of the astonished crowd, but none had any idea of his actual identity. The king was pleased with all the Pandavas. By his celestial skills in the arts, Arjuna delighted Virata and the palace ladies. Nakula showed him many well-trained and swift horses, and the king was also pleased with Sahadev's handling of his cows and bulls. But Draupadi, seeing her husbands engaged in such menial service, felt pained at heart. The Panchala princess waited upon Sudeshna in misery, but she conducted herself in such a way that the queen was satisfied by her service and gave no thought as to who she might actually be. 11 months passed. One day, as Draupadi was moving about the palace, the commander of Virata's army, Kachaka, happened to see her. The mighty Kachaka was immediately struck by Cupid's arrows when he saw Draupadi's enchanting beauty. She seemed like a goddess descended to earth. His heart was inflamed by desire. He went to his sister Sudeshna and said, "I have never seen this maidservant before. Who is she? Her beauty maddens me as wine does with its aroma. Indeed, this bewitching damsel has ground my heart and brought me under subjugation." I am fevered with desire, and only she has the cure. Tell me, sister, how has she come to be your servant? It seems that she is too good for such a position. Let her grace my palace and enjoy every opulence with me." As he spoke, Draupadi entered the queen's chamber. Without waiting for Sudeshna's answer, Kichaka turned to Draupadi and said, "Who are you, and who do you belong to? O fair-faced maiden, simply by seeing you I have lost my mind. I have never seen such grace and beauty in a woman. Are you goddess Lakshmi herself, or perhaps Sri, Hri, Kirti, or Kanti? You must be a celestial, because you shine like the moon. What man would not yield to Cupid's influence when he beheld your face shining with such heavenly beauty, your well-shaped breast resembling lotus buds, and your shapely form have afflicted me with a blazing fire of lust. O fair one, pray extinguish this fire with the rain-cloud of union. Your maddening gestures and movements have pierced my heart. It behooves you to save me from my plight by surrendering yourself to me and allowing me to enjoy your company. You shall have whatever you desire, and your time as a servant will end." Kichaka spoke at length in his attempt to woo Draupadi, but she was only filled with horror. Lowering her face and covering her head, she replied, "I am a Surindri of low caste, holding the hateful position of dressing hair. O hero, in desiring me you wish only for one who is not worthy of such an honor. Furthermore, I am already the wife of others, and thus your conduct is unbecoming. Do not turn your mind to adultery, for it leads inevitably to disgrace and calamity. To fully abandon sin is ever the duty of the good." Kichaka, whose senses were completely overpowered by lust, simply smiled. Without caring for the consequences, he addressed Draupadi in sweet tones. "O timid one, it is not fair of you to reject me. I am enslaved by Cupid on your account. If you do not accept my proposal, then you will have to regret your decision. I am the lord of this realm. The people depend upon me for their safety. In heroism I have no rival on earth. My power and prosperity are without compare. Why do you turn me down in favor of a life of servitude? I shall bestow the kingdom upon you. Live with me in happiness and enjoy whatever you desire." Draupadi was disgusted by Kichaka's shamelessness, and she became angry. "O son of Asuta, do not needlessly throw away your life. I am always protected by 5 heroes. You cannot win me, because I am already married to 5 Gandharvas of terrible prowess. They will not tolerate this insult, and will doubtlessly slay you if you persist in your attempts to win me. You will have no refuge, even if you descend to the subterranean world or soar to the heavens. My husbands always crush their enemies. Why, O Kichaka, do you desire me like a child on his mother's lap who desires the moon? Look to your safety and leave me alone." Draupadi turned and quickly walked from the queen's chamber. Kichaka was shocked and dismayed by Draupadi's stern refusal. He said to Sudeshna, "O princess, do whatever is necessary to make this maiden inclined toward me. If she does not accept me, I shall kill myself." Sudeshna pitied her brother in his disappointment. She said, "I will find a suitable opportunity and send Surindri to you to fetch something. In the solitude of your quarters, you will be able to solicit her at leisure. She will then most likely become attracted to you." Kichaka agreed to his sister's suggestion and returned to his palace. A few days later, the queen called for Draupadi and said, "O Surindri, today is a festival and I am feeling thirsty. My brother has some excellent wines prepared. Go there and fetch some for me." Draupadi answered in alarm, "O princess, I shall not go to that wicked man's house. You have seen yourself how shamelessly he approached me. O most beautiful lady, I asked when I came here that I be kept safe from other men. If you send me to Kichaka, he will dishonor me. Please send one of your other maids." You need have no fear, Sudeshna replied dismissively. You are being sent from the royal palace. My brother will not dare to insult you. The queen handed Draupadi a golden pot and waved her away. Fearful and crying, Draupadi left for Kachaka's palace. As she walked, she prayed, As I am always faithful to my husband's, by the strength of that virtue may I be protected from Kachaka. Draupadi looked up at the sun and asked the sun god for his protection. Surya, out of compassion, ordered a Rakshasa to invisibly protect her, and from that time on he never left her under any circumstances. When Draupadi entered, Kachaka stood up in joy. With folded palms he said, O fair one of beautiful tresses, you are welcome. Somehow I have managed to survive the last few days since seeing you. Now you shall become the mistress of my house. Let golden chains and brilliant ornaments of every description be brought for your pleasure. Gems, jewels, and silken garments await you in abundance. I have prepared for you a fine bed. Come, drink with me the honeyed wine. Without looking at him, Draupadi replied coldly, Sudeshna has sent me to fetch wine. Please fill this pot and let me leave quickly, for she is thirsty. Let others take the queen her wine, Kachaka said, moving toward Draupadi. You should remain here with me. Kachaka took Draupadi by the arm. Crying out in fear, she said tearfully, As I have never acted unfaithfully toward my husband's, even in my mind or heart, I shall by virtue of that truth see you hurled down and punished for this sin. Draupadi struggled free from Kachaka, and he ran after her, grabbing hold of her upper garment as it trailed behind her. Trembling in wrath, she spun around and pushed him with all her strength. Caught by surprise, he fell to the ground like a tree cut at its root. Draupadi rushed into the royal court to seek the king's protection. Kachaka pursued her and caught her right in front of the king. Pulling her back forcefully, Kachaka kicked Draupadi, and she fell to the mosaic floor. The invisible Rakshasa, appointed by the sun god, then struck Kachaka a blow with the force of the wind, and he fell prostrate. Bhima happened to be present in the court along with Yudhisthira, and he glared at Kachaka. The unforgiving Pandava gnashed his teeth and clenched his fist, ready to leap up at once and kill Kachaka. His eyes became dark and smoky, and terrible wrinkles appeared on his forehead, along with beads of sweat. Bhima rubbed his forehead with his huge hand, fighting his desire to hurl himself at Draupadi's offender. Yudhisthira reached over and pressed Bhima's arm. O cook, you had best go about your business, he said in a low voice. You are surely needed in the kitchen. Restrained by his elder brother, Bhima rose up slowly and left the court, with his eyes fixed on Kachaka, who was picking himself up from the floor, looking around in amazement to see who had struck him. Draupadi, seeing her husbands maintaining their disguises before the king, stood before Virata with flashing eyes. This son of Asuta has kicked me, the honored wife of those whose enemies can never sleep, even if they reside in heaven. The Suta's son has kicked me, the respected consort of those who are truthful, devoted to Brahmins, and ever accustomed to giving charity. He has kicked me, the beloved wife of those who are endowed with energy, power, and self-control, and who, if they were not tied down by duty, could destroy the whole of this world. Alas, where today are those warriors? How can they, like eunuchs, suffer their spouse to be so insulted? Where is their wrath, prowess, and energy, when they cannot protect their own wife from a wretch? As she spoke, Draupadi glanced toward Yudhisthira, who was squirming in pain. Turning her gaze on Virata, she went on, What can I do? I am in this city, and he who defies virtue has coolly allowed me to be insulted before his eyes. Why does the king not act like a king toward Kachaka? O best of men, how do you tolerate this outrage? Let all the courtiers mark your failure today. Where is virtue in either Kachaka or Virata? or even in the silent courtiers who have witnessed Kachaka's despicable behavior. Draupadi was sobbing. Virata replied, I do not know the full details of your quarrel with Kachaka. Without knowing everything, how can I pass judgment? The king looked at his brother-in-law, who was smiling. The aging Virata depended on Kachaka to defend his city. The king could not say anything to offend him, but the courtiers were now praising Draupadi and reproaching Kachaka. This gentle lady is like a goddess in our midst, they said. Surely the man who has her for a wife wants for nothing. By insulting her, Kachaka has performed a sinful deed. Yudhisthira sat burning with anger. Drops of perspiration ran down his face. In a taut voice, he said to Draupadi, O Surendri, you should return to Sudeshna's apartments. The wives of heroes endure pain on behalf of their husbands, but in the end they attain those blessed regions where their husbands go. I think your Gandhava husbands do not feel the moment is right for a display of their power. You should not remain here and cause a disturbance. Be confident that your husbands will assuage your sorrow in due course. Draupadi, who had fallen weeping to the floor, composed herself and stood up to leave. I practice piety for the sake of my kind and forgiving husbands. They, of whom the eldest is addicted to dice, are ever oppressed by others. Watched by the mystified king, she went out of the court with her head lowered and returned to the queen's chambers. When Sudeshna saw her tearful face, she asked, O beautiful one, who has slighted you? Why do you weep? O gentle one, whose happiness will come to an end today? Bowing before the queen, Draupadi replied, As I went to fetch your wine, Kachaka struck me in the court in the king's presence. What? Then I shall have him chastised, Sudeshna said angrily. O lady with curling tresses, if it is your will, then let this lustful man be killed. Do not worry, O queen. Those whom he has wronged will deal with him soon enough. I think he will go to the region of Yamaraj before long. Draupadi went to her own rooms and bathed herself, putting on fresh garments. She wanted to purify herself of Kachaka's touch. Her mind dwelt on her insult, and she considered how to avenge herself. She thought of Bhima. He had obviously been ready to annihilate Kachaka on the spot. Certainly he would fulfill her desire if she approached him. She could not face another day knowing that Kachaka still lived. Seeing the king powerless to protect her and thinking she had no protector, Kachaka would doubtlessly continue to harass her. Draupadi decided to go to Bhima. When the palace residents were asleep, she went silently to his quarters. As she entered his room, she found him asleep, snoring like a lion. The chamber filled with her beauty and Bhima's effulgence seemed ablaze with splendor. The princess went up to Bhima's bed and embraced him, even as a creeper embraces a sal tree. In a voice as sweet as the sound of a veena, she said, O Bhimasen, rise up. Why do you sleep like one dead? How can a sinful wretch survive after insulting the wife of one who lives? Bhima sat up. Why have you woken me, gentle princess? You appear wan and sorrowful. Surely the incident today in Virata's court is the reason. I too am burning with anger as I remember it. Tell me the cause of your pain. O Panchali, and I shall do whatever lies in my power. I will always do whatever pleases you, and I am prepared to deliver you from danger again and again. Quickly, let me know your desire, and go back to your bed before others are up. Draupadi wept. How can she who has Yudhisthira for a husband ever be free of grief? You know all, O Bharata, and have no need to ask. The grief I felt when Dushasan dragged me into the assembly hall still burns me day and night. What other princess could have lived after such an insult? How could anyone survive what I suffered at Jayadrath's hands? Who but me could endure being kicked in the presence of the Matsya king? Of what use is my life when you allow me to suffer all these pains, O hero? Bhima gently stroked his wife's face as she wept. She looked into his angry eyes and continued, "The wicked Kachaka wants me to marry him. As I remember his words, my heart bursts like an overripe fruit. O slayer of foes, all my sufferings are due to your elder brother's addiction to dice. Who else but him could have sacrificed everything, including his own self, for the sake of gambling? Having lost inestimable quantities of wealth, he now supports himself by dicing. The great King Yudhisthira, who was worshipped by throngs of Brahmins and tributary kings, now hides himself in fear, overpowered by calamity. That Lord of men, who is free from cruelty, full of compassion, forbearing, and truthful, has become a gambler in King Virata's court. He now depends on another's mercy for his subsistence. Surely he is experiencing the misery of hell." Draupadi poured out all her pent-up grief. The time in Virata had passed slowly for her. With no opportunity to speak to her husbands and to be solaced by them, she had suffered silently. It was agonizing to see her five heroic husbands living as servants, and her own position as a serving maid was practically intolerable. Only her sense of duty and loyalty to Yudhisthira sustained her. Although she criticized Yudhisthira to Bhima, she would never consider being disloyal to him, even for a moment. She spoke at length of her sorrow at seeing Yudhisthira's plight, and Bhima consoled her. Taking hold of Bhima's hands, the Panchala princess continued, "O Bharata, I shall tell you of another great grief. Do not become angry, as I speak only out of the sadness in my heart, but seeing you as a servant and cook causes me more distress than I can bear. When Virata joyfully made you fight with elephants, and the ladies of his palace laugh, my mind sank in sorrow. Indeed, I fainted, and the queen had to revive me. It seems you harbor some attachment for this cook. Both of you came to Virata together, and I often see you lamenting for him. Are you attached to this handsome Vallabha? She still chides me in this way, which only increases my pain." Draupadi then described to Bhima the pain she felt on seeing Arjuna acting as a eunuch. "The mighty Dhananjaya, the scourge of his enemies and fearful to even the celestials, now lives in a guise despised by all men. Covering his body with gaudy clothes and bangles, that hero lives in grief, surrounded only by women. When I see the dreadful wielder of the bow decked with ornaments, with his hair tied in a braid, my heart burns with anguish." Bhima remained silent as Draupadi spoke, revealing to him all the pain she was experiencing upon seeing each of her husbands in positions of servitude. Finally, she concluded, "I tell you all this only so you may be aware of my suffering. You are always my protector and shelter, and I depend fully upon you, O son of Pandu. Surely in some past life I offended some great deity and am thus receiving the results. The destiny of men is difficult to understand. When I see you five brothers cast into sorrow and myself subjugated to the hard miseries of a maidservant, I consider it all the work of inscrutable destiny. I do not know how much longer I can carry on, however. Just look at my hands." Draupadi held out her hands and showed Bhima the calluses caused by the work she did for the queen. Hearing of her suffering and seeing her condition, Bhima covered his face and cried. After some moments, he composed himself and said in sorrow, "Fie on the strength of my arms, and fie to Arjuna's Gandiva, since I now see your two lotus hands scarred by work. O princess, I would have wrought havoc in Virata's court, but Yudhisthira restrained me. With a single kick I would have crushed Kachaka's head. O Panchali, when I saw him strike you, I was ready to destroy the Matsya race. It was only due to Dharmaraj that I held back. I too suffer in silence, O beautiful one. that we have been expelled from our kingdom, that I have not yet annihilated the Kauravas, and that we are forced to live here as servants, scorches my limbs and afflicts my heart as if it were pierced by a dart. Bhima told Draupadi to be patient and not criticize Yudhisthira. He cited the examples of other great ladies who had followed their husbands in times of misery. Eventually, they were all brought again to happiness due to their virtuous practices. Bhima held Draupadi's hands. "Less than a month now remains of our exile," he said. "After that time, you will again become an empress. Do not doubt." Draupadi threw herself onto Bhima's chest. "I do not think I will last that long. The wicked mind in Kachaka will not leave me alone. He has no fear from anyone, and will doubtlessly seek to outrage me if I do not accept him. That man is without virtue. He is proud, cruel, impudent, and warlike, absorbed only in gratifying his senses. Even the king has no power over him, and he will not hesitate to approach me as he pleases. O Bhima, although you Pandavas are adhering to your pledge out of virtue, you will surely suffer a loss of virtue when I am violated and give up my life. To protect one's wife is a pious husband's first duty, for from the wife one's own self is born as the son. For heroes there is always virtue in repressing the enemy. O Mighty One, as you have always rescued me from wicked men, I entreat you to slay Kachaka without delay. If he should live for even one more day, I will swallow poison and give up my life." Bhima made up his mind. He could not stand Draupadi's pain. Taking her by the shoulders, he said, "Gentle one, I will do as you say. Today I will slay Kachaka and all his followers. Listen carefully. When the sun rises, you should go to him with sweet smiles. Tell him that you secretly hold in your heart an attraction for him. Then arrange to meet him in the evening. There is a dancing hall some way from the other residences, which is empty at night. Have him come there, and I shall greet him and send him to meet his ancestors." Overjoyed, Draupadi embraced Bhima and left his room. Just after dawn the next day, Kachaka went to the palace to seek her out. Finding her in the queen's quarters, he said, "O timid one, yesterday you witnessed my power. Although I threw you down in front of the king, he said nothing. He is king in name only. I am the actual ruler here. Accept me as your lord, and I shall bestow heaps of gold and gems upon you. 100 male and 100 female servants will wait upon you. You will ride on the best of chariots. O beautiful lady, let us be united." Draupadi glanced down demurely. Turning herself slightly away from Kachaka, she replied, "O Kachaka, our union together must be without anyone else's knowledge. I am afraid of my husband's. If we can lie in secret, then I shall be yours." Kachaka, his face blooming with happiness, replied eagerly, "It shall be as you say. I am under your control and overpowered by Cupid. O lady of beautiful thighs, we can meet in some lonely place where none shall detect us." Feeling sickened within herself, but smiling outwardly, Draupadi said, "Not far from here is the king's dancing hall. The princess uses it only in the day. I will go there 2 hours after sunset. O hero, meet with me there." Draupadi left at once and went to her own chamber. Thinking of the night to come, the day seemed like a month. On the plea of feeling ill, she remained in her room the whole day. She felt sullied by her conversation with Kachaka and would only feel peaceful when he was slain. For his part, Kachaka was filled with anticipation. As evening approached, he dressed carefully and ornamented himself. He put on fragrant garlands and smeared his limbs with perfumes and sandalwood paste. Overpowered by lust, he waited for nightfall. How the time was dragging! As soon as the sun had set, Bhima made his way to the dancing hall. He slipped inside and hid himself, waiting for Kichaka's arrival. Draupadi also came there, and before long Kichaka entered the darkened hall. He called out for Draupadi. "Being praised for my beauty by the women in my house, I came here thinking of you alone. You shall become the best of my consorts, and I shall give you immense wealth. O fair maiden, where are you?"
"By my good fortune, you have come here tonight, O handsome one," Draupadi replied sweetly. "I consider your touch as burning, and you are an expert at gallantry. There is no other man as attractive as you are to women. O hero, I am over here."
Kichaka moved toward the sound of Draupadi's voice. Bhima was hiding behind a silk drape at the side of the hall. As Kichaka passed, he suddenly came out and stood before him. Bhima's angry voice boomed out, "Today your sister shall behold you, vile as you are, thrown down on the earth with your limbs shattered. With you slain, Sarindri shall wander freely without fear. Then too we, her husbands, shall live happily." Bhima immediately seized hold of Kichaka's hair, which was adorned with garlands, and dragged him down. Kichaka was shocked. Sarindri had tricked him. Trying to shake off the slight inebriation from the wine he had been drinking, he pulled himself free of Bhima's grasp. Bhima punched Kichaka with his iron, hard fists. Kichaka took hold of Bhima's two arms and tried to kick away his feet. The two mighty men shuffled violently around the hall, locked together. They appeared like two celestial monkeys, Vali and Sugriva, fighting together in days of yore. Breaking apart, they stood belligerently facing one another. Their upraised arms looked like two pairs of furious five-hooded serpents. They struck one another with the force of thunderbolts. The empty hall resounded with great cracks, and the walls trembled. In rage, they fought with fists, nails, and teeth. They kicked and hurled each other about with the force of a tempest. Neither showed fatigue nor wavered. Blows rained down without cessation as both men became worked up into a fury. Like two powerful bulls, they came against each other again and again. As their blows landed, the air was filled with the sound of trees splitting open. Kichaka was astonished at his opponent's power. Although he had fought and defeated great heroes all over the world, he had never encountered such a foe. It was like fighting with a mountain or the earth itself. Kichaka exerted himself to his full power, trying to throw the unshakable Bhima to the ground. But Bhima caught him in an embrace that crushed him like a steel vise. Breathing in deeply and expanding his massive chest, Kichaka broke free. Bhima instantly came at him again and struck him on the breast. Then he threw Kichaka across the hall as a hurricane tosses a tree. Mustering all his strength, Kichaka rushed at Bhima and took hold of his neck. He pulled the Pandava down and brought his knee up into his chest with all his power. Bhima was thrown to the floor and he rolled over quickly. He looked up at Kichaka with burning eyes. Appearing like Yamaraj with mace in hand, he rose from the floor blazing with anger. He bellowed at Kichaka and rushed at him like a maddened elephant, charging another. The two heroes again locked together, grunting and grappling as they moved about the hall. Although Kichaka was a powerful fighter, expert in all forms of combat, he found all his moves more than matched by Bhima. Gradually he felt his strength waning. Bhima, seeing his foe weakening, became even more energetic. He took hold of Kichaka and crushed him in his mace-like arms. Unable to catch his breath, Kichaka fell senseless to the floor. Bhima grabbed his hair and roared like a lion that had just killed a large animal. Lifting his groggy opponent over his head, he whirled him about violently. Bhima then smashed Kichaka onto the marble floor and fell upon him. Placing his knees on Kichaka's chest, he took hold of his throat, strangling him.
Draupadi was joyful as she watched Bhima pound Kichaka into a mutilated mast. He thrust his arms and head and legs into his body and reduced him to a shapeless lump of flesh. His anger appeased by Kichaka's death, Bhima stood up. He turned to Draupadi. "See what I have done to this wretch, Panchali. You should know that any who seek to harm you will meet a similar end, O beautiful-haired one." Bhima left the hall and made his way back to his room. Draupadi returned to the palace and told the guards they should go to the dancing hall. "There you will find he who desired another's wife. Slain by my Gandharva husbands, he lies weltering in gore." The guards ran to the hall and saw the dead Kichaka. They gazed in amazement at his mangled body. Gradually, thousands of soldiers came there to see their slain commander lying amid his scattered ornaments. All of them were astonished. He was hardly recognizable. Who was capable of such a feat? Kichaka was an almost invincible warrior who had beaten the best wrestlers and fighters in the world. The soldiers gasped in disbelief. None of them suspected Vallabha. Struck with wonder, they stood about asking, "Who could have done this? Where are Kichaka's arms and legs? Where is his head?" As Kichaka's followers looked at him, they were filled with fear. Talking among themselves, they concluded that their leader must have been killed by the Gandharvas. They lifted his body, which resembled the body of a tortoise, with its limbs withdrawn, and carried him outside the hall to perform the last rites. As they made their way to the cremation ground, they saw Draupadi watching them. Knowing that Kichaka had gone to meet her, some of them exclaimed, "There is the unchaste one for whom Kichaka was slain. She too should be killed. Let us burn her along with our lord." A couple of the soldiers sought the king's permission to execute Draupadi by placing her on the fire with Kichaka. The king, knowing the power of his commander's followers, agreed. The suitors at once ran to Draupadi and seized her. They bound the struggling princess and placed her upon the large briar with Kichaka's corpse. Draupadi cried out in terror as she was carried away toward the crematorium, "May Jai, Jayanta, Vijaya, Jayatsena, and Jayabalabha hear my words. Save me. The suttas are carrying me away. Let those heroic Gandharvas, whose chariots and bows resound like thunder, understand that their wife is in great peril." Bhima heard her pitiful cries. Without hesitation, he ran from his room. He could understand that Kichaka's followers were taking Draupadi to the crematorium. The Pandava went there by a different route without being seen, his head covered with cloth. Scaling walls and crossing gardens, he swiftly reached the cremation ground, which lay just outside the city. He found a great palmyra tree and immediately uprooted it. He placed it on his shoulders. Kichaka's followers arrived and saw Bhima standing like death personified, holding his rod of chastisement. They howled in fear. "Here is the Gandharva who killed Kichaka. Release Sundrini before he kills us all." The suttas put Draupadi down and ran in all directions. Bhima pursued them relentlessly and struck them down with the tree. As he struck out at them, he knocked over other trees which fell crashing to the ground. Roaring like a furious lion, the Pandava slew all the suttas one after another. In a short time, the crematorium was covered with more than 100 dead bodies. They all lay about like uprooted trees. Telling Draupadi to return to her rooms, Bhima quickly went back by the route he had come before anyone discovered him. The people of Virata, hearing the commotion from the crematorium, rushed to see what was causing it. Discovering the slain suttas, they ran to the king and informed him. "O king, the powerful sutta followers of Kichaka have all been killed. They are scattered about like so many mountain summits, clapped by thunderbolts. Surely this is the work of the Gandharvas, enraged by Kichaka's assault on Sundrini. She is now returning to your city unharmed.
We are afraid of her. She is beautiful beyond compare. The Gandharvas are powerful and wrathful, and men are undoubtedly lustful. Quickly do something, so that our city may not be destroyed." Virata was astonished. "Let Kichaka and all his followers be cremated on one great pyre with gems and perfumes. I will take care of Sandrini." Turning to his wife, the king said, "When Sandrini comes, tell her this from me. O fair one, please go wherever you like with my blessings. We are afraid of the Gandharvas, and that they will destroy us. Indeed, I am too fearful to even speak with you directly." As Draupadi entered the city, the people fled in all directions, like deer seeing a tiger. Some even shut their eyes and covered their heads. Draupadi went back into the palace. After she had bathed, the queen approached her and conveyed Virata's message. Draupadi replied, "O queen, allow me to remain here for only 2 more weeks. The Gandharvas will be obliged to you for this favor. After that, they will take me away from here, and do whatever is agreeable to you." The queen assented and released Draupadi from her duties. After telling her to remain in the palace until her husband's come, she left to inform the king.